This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
They say they're being attacked by Arab militia. There's like executions, there's rape going on.
That's reporter Samuel Burry on the horror stories he heard from Sudanese refugees crossing from West Darfur into Chad, where they're building a makeshift camp. Also, the UN Security Council votes to withdraw UN peacekeepers from Mali, and armed men killed at least 20 people this week in the Western Democratic Republic of Congo. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The UN Security Council has voted unanimously today to end a decade-long peacekeeping mission in Mali after the West African country's military junta asked it 2 weeks ago to leave, quote, without delay, end quote. The end of the mission, known as MUNISMA, follows years of tensions and government restrictions on the force. For more, I spoke to Joseph Sani. He's vice president at the Africa Center of the United States Institute of Peace this past hour, and I began by asking how the troop withdrawal would play out.
We are talking moving about 40,000 people, including equipment spread throughout the country. So I think it will be in the interest of everyone, including Mali, to have an orderly withdrawal. It took 6 months, 4,000 people for the French to withdraw from Mali. I think it will be to negotiate the terms of that withdrawal. I have heard the Malian government talking about 3 months. Some are talking about 6 months, some 12 months. In any case, it will require cooperation of all parties because a lot is at risk here, right? So a disorderly withdrawal, the weapons and equipment may fall into the hands of non-state actors who may use them for different nefarious purposes. So that's why I keep insisting it is important, it is in the interest of the Malian government itself to collaborate and cooperate with MINUSMA for an orderly withdrawal.
And these UN troops, they're credited with playing a crucial role in protecting civilians against an Islamist insurgency, which has been happening in that country for years. Thousands have been killed in Mali. What is going to be the impact on civilians?
If nothing is done properly, if the impact is quite, can be very disastrous for civilians. Even in the context of an orderly withdrawal, I think the MINUSMA departure will create a vacuum. I know that the Malian government is talking to African countries, maybe to put in place a new peace and security architecture to make sure that the Malian military can fill that vacuum, but it will not be easy. So I think we are very concerned that if nothing is done, I mean, casualties number will go up. I mean, because MINUSMA really, for all the deficiency or the gaps, MINUSMA play a role in protecting civilians to some extent. And MINUSMA not being around, that will create a vacuum. And civilians will suffer, I think.
One Security Council diplomat speaking anonymously to Reuters said, it's a Malian decision and we need to find the least horrible way to implement it. It sounds like you agree with that.
I agree with that assessment. It is a Malian decision. Well, one thing I will add to that assessment, I think we should not be in the logic of punishing the Malians. So that's a careful line, right? So we have the responsibility to protect civilians. It is a responsibility. Of course, nobody will protect the Malians than their government, but the international community should also not be in the logic of, okay, it is their decision, they will live with the consequences. Let's see what the Malians will do. I think that will be irresponsible, I think.
That is Joseph Sani. He's vice president at the Africa Center of the U.S. Institute of Peace. He was speaking to me this past hour here in Washington. Observers of Sierra Leone's election are raising concerns about vote count irregularities in a ballot that declared President Julius Maada Bio re-election. As the Muslim majority nation marks Islam's Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice, there are calls for peace and unity after violence during the polling process left at least one person dead. Sinanu Tord reports from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission says Julius Maada Bio won the 2023 presidential election, narrowly capturing victory with 56% of the valid votes. That is just above the 55% needed to avoid a runoff. But national and international observer missions say there are concerns about how the figure was tallied due to a lack of transparency and restricted access to the vote counting process. Marcella Sambasisi is the chairperson of the National Election Watch.
Things became a little bit awry and opaque. A number of observer missions could not be able to do the collation as they wish to. A number of National Elections Watch observers at the tally centers equally called attention to access to the process. There were access to observe in some areas, in some regions, because regional tally centers were done, whilst in others, access was very limited.
National Election Watch, or NEW, has been observing Sierra Leone polls since the end of the 11-year civil war in 2002. The group says none of the presidential candidates met the minimum threshold to secure a win. It also questioned the Electoral Commission's voter turnout figures and rejection of ballots it said were inaccurate. The opposition party, All People's Congress, claimed its candidate, Dr. Samura Kamara, won the vote, sparking violence outside its headquarters. Arudu Kamara says he lives nearby.
So the force for dispatching.
Police used force to disperse the people. They started firing tear gas into the crowd. I tried to get closer to see what was happening, but things got tense and the security personnel started firing live bullets into the crowd, so I quickly left the scene.
Political analysts say campaign messages further deepened existing divide. Melvin Tijan Mansari is a political analyst and a former parliamentary correspondent.
Both political parties, both of their candidates were pelting it. If you go to the south and the southeast, people were using that tribal sentiment of, oh, if you don't vote for us, these people are coming against you. And if you go to the northwest, people are going to tell you that, oh, you see, we are in opposition and see how we've been treated.
As some families mark the Eid al-Adha, they urge the newly sworn-in president to address the nation for unity. Floyd C. Wright says many are still traumatized from the civil war, and leaders should work to heal and unite the nation.
Come on radio, come on TV, do jingles, try and preach peace. Tomorrow is another day. The other elections will be in 5 years' time. So let's try and deal with the situation we have now in terms of moving the country forward.
Meanwhile, Sierra Leoneans wait to see what legal steps the opposition parties will take and hope to come out united. Sena Anutot for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Protests over the fatal shooting of a teenager rocked France for a third straight night, with cars burned, buildings vandalized, and hundreds of people arrested in cities across the country. Police shot dead a 17-year-old identified as Nahel M during a traffic stop in the Paris suburb of Nanterre. Nahel M is of Algerian and Moroccan descent, and his death has particularly angered the nation's immigrant community. Journalist Catherine Field is in Nanterre, and she spoke earlier today with VOA's Kate Pound-Downson.
It's been very tense here most of the day. It was overnight. There was an enormous amount of violence, enormous number of buses, cars set fire, houses were set fire to. It has calmed down. It did calm down during the day, but you get the feeling now that police are expecting more trouble this evening. All the restaurants are starting to close down for the night. A lot of the furniture, outside furniture, is being brought in. And there's just a feeling that despite all the outrage, that the message has still not gotten across, that these demonstrations are really demonstrations calling on the police to show more respect for the community and to understand what it is to live in this community.
This particular death really has struck a very big nerve on the immigrant community in France. There are protests over in many parts of the country. Tell us about why that is.
It was an event which unfortunately happens quite regularly, where police pulled over a young driver for either a security check, a driver's license check, or whatever. It's still not clear. And when they pulled him over, they said in their latest statement that they pulled him over and that he was acting strangely, that they feared for their lives, that he was going to drive into them, and that they shot him when they thought they were in danger. Now, all that went out on the media in France. Then, within a couple of hours, on social media, there was released a video that had been recorded by a passerby that showed the police were not in any danger, that this driver had stopped. They also recorded the scene of the policeman holding a gun inside the window of that car, and the policeman had said to this driver, "I'm going to lodge a bullet in your head." Driver then started to move away. There was a shot. Now, when that video went live, it really just went all over France very quickly. People came out and said, this is exactly what we're dealing with, that the police say one thing, we see something else, that this time we have evidence that the police were not telling the truth.
Now, the pulling over this driver and other young drivers, is that particularly generating anger among the immigrant community? Do they feel that they are more targeted by the police and that the police just gloss over it?
Exactly. When you look at, for example, the figures for last year, 2022 in France, 13 people were killed at police checks and they failed to stop at a traffic police check. Now, the majority of those 13 who were killed were either of North African or African descent. It is way bigger than the portion of the population in retrospect of that. So, yes, they are saying that they are pulled over more often. They are pulled over more often for very simple reasons or for allegations, and that this is part of their daily life. That you're, and to a point, you do see them out and about more because they are taking a lot of these hourly paid jobs, whether it's delivery, by bike or by car. They are out and about, but they do say, and there is evidence to show, that they get pulled over more often. And then the other thing that is being said at the moment is we're in these low-income areas where a lot of these people live, there isn't really the investment in the sort of facilities that the more wealthier suburbs get. Education, sports facilities. They said that in these areas, a lot of the money, the state money that goes into it, is for security. And they say, look, they point to this and say, this is what we think that you think of us, that we're only worth having extra security and that we're not worth having better schools, better sports facilities, or even just better facilities all around.
That's journalist Catherine Field in Nanterre outside Paris speaking with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson. More than 800 protesters were arrested Thursday night. There are few signs government appeals to de-escalate the violence, including the French leader Macron, will quell the widespread anger. Emmanuel Macron left an EU meeting early to be in Paris today for a crisis cabinet meeting. He's ordered police reinforcements on the streets and has asked towns to halt bus and tram service at 9 p.m. local time. Macron also called on social media to remove sensitive footage of rioting and to disclose the names of users who incite violence on their platforms. The Zimbabwe African National Union Patriotic Front, or ZANU-PF, has ruled the country for some 43 years. But the opposition party thinks the poor economy might give it an opportunity to make gains in upcoming elections. Columbus Mavunga has this report from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare.
On August 23, Zimbabwe will hold a general election with the country mired in an economic crisis with the prices of goods and services on the rise. Independent political analyst Rejoice Ngwenya says President Emmerson Mnangagwa is having a hard time convincing voters his party is making life better for people.
With the local currency fast losing value, in the average Zimbabwean facing price-related poverty, it will be very difficult for President Mnangagwa to sell his economic agenda to exasperated Zimbabweans.
The Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, is Zimbabwe's main opposition party, led by Nelson Chamisa. Fadzai Mahere, spokeswoman for the party, which is also known as CCC, says the opposition is being treated unfairly.
The constitution also requires that we be given the voters' role in advance. It's not fair that ZANU-PF appear to have the voters' role, which is why Mr. Mnangagwa was able to send SMSs to citizens using the new boundaries, and yet the CCC, a key player, doesn't have the same. We also call for an end to the political violence.
Zimbabwe's previous elections, especially the 2008 vote, were marred by violence against the opposition. This time, President Mnangagwa has been calling for peaceful elections. The Zimbabwe Elections Support Network is a coalition of non-governmental organizations formed to promote democratic processes and fair elections. Andrew Makoni from the network says the coalition's main concern is seeing a fair election result.
Judging by the kind of challenges experienced by those who went to inspect the voters' roll, we foresee that if the voters' roll is not properly audited, a lot of names will be missing from the voters' roll. A lot of people will find it difficult to access their polling stations, and this will not augur well for this election. It will taint the election.
Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission turned down a request for an interview, saying it would hold a press conference as the elections approach. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, head on over to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Thousands of Sudanese refugees have poured into neighboring Chad as the paramilitary rapid support forces and the Sudanese army have been locked in a bloody battle for control of that country since April 15th. Hundreds of people have died in West Darfur state alone. Samuel Burry is a Swiss public radio reporter who left eastern Chad near West Darfur last Friday. Burry tells me he spoke to several refugees at the border who shared stories of horror as they made their way out of West Darfur.
There's like several thousands just in the small town of Adre. Some of them are actually have built like an improvised refugee camp around a school, like 3,000 people there. It's a huge number, and they lack basically everything because they had to flee impromptu. They had to flee like really fast from the violence. And sometimes even like the little stuff that they were able to take with them, they were stopped later again by militia and were taken, even sometimes their shoes or their clothes.
You had a chance to talk to some of these people. What did they tell you? I've been hearing some horror stories, but I don't know. What did these people tell you?
Yes, there are indeed a lot of really, really sad and frightening stories, especially right now from the town of Jenina. That's the capital of Western Darfur province, where right now a lot of people come in. Well, they're basically being attacked. They say they're being attacked by Arab militia. There's like executions, there's rape going on, and a lot of them, like I've talked to one lady, she says like her mother died in an attack and they couldn't bury the mother during the day because they would have been attacked by snipers, so they had to go and bury the mother in the darkness of the night, like in secrecy. And then later on, She fled from Jenina, and on the way to Chad, on the way to security, their convoy got stopped. All men had to leave the cars. They were lined up in a line, and then one of the a young militia guy came and basically shot all of the men.
That's terrible. What is fueling this?
with all these attacks on just civilians, unarmed civilians. This has been going on now since mid-April with the fighting that broke out between RSF and the army. What is fueling this kind of, I guess, hatred with just civilians who are just trying to survive?
It's very hard to understand from the outside, I have to admit. I have been to Darfur, to Jenina, actually about 2 years ago. And what I realized is like there's a lot of historic baggage, basically, that all the people from all sides bring with them. Maybe we could say it started like 20 years ago when some of the so-called African tribes of Darfur tried to become independent, and the then president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, tried to contain this uprising by not sending his own army, but by arming so-called Janjaweed militias. That these were like Arab people on horses who he basically financed from Khartoum, because he didn't want basically another uprising in the country. And from this, Janjaweed later on derived the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, that are now one of the parties in the Sudan conflict. And I think it's just like, it's basically an ethnic conflict, but there's a lot more to it. It's about like ownership of land. It's about resources, water, and so on. But why these attacks on civilians, to be honest, I still don't understand it fully.
That's Samuel Burry, a reporter with Swiss Public Radio who just left the Chad border with Sudan a few days ago. He was speaking to me from Nairobi, Kenya. And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yaburo, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is committed to holding the perpetrators of sexual violence accountable and to backing countries to deliver the long overdue justice that the victims and survivors deserve, said United States Representative to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. Conflict-related sexual violence is prevalent around the world. Russian soldiers in Ukraine, gang members in Haiti, armed groups in Sudan, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo are using gender-based violence, including sexual violence, to terrorize and control populations with impunity. Some of the most egregious crimes against humanity, particularly gender-based violence against women and girls, were committed by the ISIS terrorist group against Iraq's Yazidi community. On August 3, 2014, ISIS militants invaded the Yazidi homeland and began a reign of terror. They murdered the men and boys and took the women and girls as sex slaves. Yazidi women were raped, degraded, tortured, and murdered, bought and sold like cattle. On June 20th, the U.S. Department of State designated two ISIS leaders as specially designated global terrorists under Executive Order 13224. They are Arkan Ahmad Abbas al-Matuti, also known as Abu Sarhan, a senior field military commander in the town of Wilayat al-Jazira, and Nawaf Ahmad Alwan al-Rashidi, or Abu Faris, an ISIS financial manager and smuggler. At the same time, the Department of State and the Treasury Department Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, designated pursuant to Executive Order 13664 two high-ranking officials of South Sudan for their involvement in abductions of South Sudanese women and girls and conflict-related sexual violence. James Nando is a major general in South Sudan's People's Defense Forces. In 2021, forces loyal to Nando were responsible for at least 64 instances of rape and sexual slavery against civilians in western Equatoria. In In 2018, Nanda was responsible for the abduction of hundreds of women and girls. Also in 2018, forces under the command of Alfred Fatuyo, currently the governor of Western Equatoria, carried out numerous attacks there that resulted in the abduction of 887 civilians, of whom at least 43 were raped. The United States does not accept conflict-related sexual violence as an inevitable cost of armed conflict, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a written statement. We remain committed to supporting survivor-centered and trauma-informed approaches to helping survivors access the services needed to help them recover and secure the justice they deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.